Okay, good evening. Good evening. I'd like to call the Wednesday, February 21st, 2018 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Nichols?
Here.
Director Hill?
Here.
Chair Austin?
Here. You all rise for the flag salute.
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Brings us to agenda review. Is there anyone want to change anything on the agenda?
No.
Nope. Barbara, do you have any?
No, nothing.
Okay.
Thank you.
That brings us to public comment for items not on the agenda. I'll repeat that comments should be limited to 3 minutes or less. Comments directed to the board as a whole. Slanderous, profane, personal remarks against any board member, staff, or member of the audience not permitted. And I want to, this came up last time, I want to ask you to please respect people's right to speak when they're at the podium and not talk in the background when people are speaking. It makes it very difficult. And also on the video cameras, video recording is fine. You can record cameras, but you cannot disrupt the meeting. And the cameras shall remain stationary and operated behind the speaker's podium. Okay, with that, we have our first public comment.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and again, I am here to ask that your board consider rescinding the censure of Mayor Hill. And I'm going to ask again that you investigate Mayor Scholes. And what I want you to understand is that those two things are connected, because Mayor Scholes admits to have met with staff outside his authority, and he doesn't use the word meddle, that's my word, but he meddled in personnel matters. I wrote to your board. I can send it again if you'd like, or you can ask your staff to provide the letter where I transcribed exactly what he said at a meeting last fall, where he admits that he met with staff, tried to work something out with them. Perhaps this is not his role. It was not allowed. Why that is connected to the censure is those are the things that were Mayor Hill was accused of and never found to have done. But your board censured him anyway. Another thing that I brought to your board before, and I will again and again, as long as it takes, ask that you agendize a community discussion about expanding this board. Clearly, the three-member board doesn't work well. In 1984, the grand jury of San Luis Obispo County recommended that your board be expanded to represent the communities at large, the larger communities. So again, I ask that tonight, and I look forward to the rest of your meeting.
Thank you. Anyone else have public comment?
Chris Victorine. And I'm very concerned about the district's financial audits. The 2015-16 audit is 14 months overdue. The 2016-17 is 2 months overdue and hasn't even been started yet. And this fiscal year end is only 4 months away. Glenn Burdett's audit contract states in Exhibit B, in the event that disclosures in the audit indicate extraordinary circumstances that warrant more intensive and detailed services, we will provide in advance all pertinent facts relative to the extraordinary circumstances to the Board of Trustees, meaning the Board of Directors. It further states, no extended services will be performed unless they are authorized in writing by the district and the agreement covering the work done has been amended to reflect those extended services. I think you can all agree that extended services have been performed. The district has been unable to provide a reasonable explanation for the delays, and you as the board are responsible for the financial well-being of this district. Has Glenn Burdett been authorized in writing, and has the contract been amended as required? If you haven't done so already, I request the board fulfill their responsibility and contact Glenn Burdett for a complete explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else have public comment?
Hi, Colin Kubel. Just one observation. I've been coming to these meetings now for quite a while. This board very rarely answers questions from the public. Very rarely. And there is no transparency on many of the issues that we have concerns about and bring to your attention. We have board members that don't even look at us when we're talking. They're looking at other paperwork. They're doing everything else. They're not listening or looking at eye contact with me or whoever's up here. And we just like the courtesy of that, if nothing else. And so maybe to get this board to understand, we need to start a grassroots town hall meeting to get this board to listen to us. Maybe that's what we need to do as the public, because no one else is listening. And it's time that you really start putting away the partisanship of each city and everything else and start listening. Look at us. We look at you. And I'm being courteous. I won't do any other thing. And I just would like that respect back to me or anybody who's standing up here. I don't care which side it's on. We just deserve that. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else have public comment?
Patricia Price. I have been concerned about the application process for the next administrator. And I would like to request that all of the applications for that position be turned in to each member of the board so that they could be reviewed. I also would like to ask if someone who wanted to put in an application could submit it directly to the board members or to the administrator rather than going through this company. Does it have to go through this company? Because I don't have a lot of faith in them. So I think that all of the applications need to be brought forth and looked at, because you as members of this community know what would be the best fit for this district. So please consider insisting on that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Mary Lucia Asciano. I just wanted to bring it to your attention that Ms. Tacker had filed an FPPC complaint against one of your board members, and extensive legal hours went into this report, and the FPCC has responded back, and that Ms. Austin actually had overstated and oversupplied personal information on her 700 form. I guess I'm real disappointed that, you know, you're a sewer board, you know, we ask you to just keep our sewer plant going and not have to deal with all this other stuff simply as, you know, overstating your assets on a 700 form. But I did want to inform the board and the public that the document from the FPPC is back in, and she overstated and was found to be of no fault at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I'll close public comment. Let's see, we'll come back. And next item is our consent agenda. So these are the routine items that we will do all as one. And if anyone wants to pull something off separate, let me know.
I have one question on the temporary labor services, $2,594.88. Was that for plant services, for office services, or what?
It's office. It's office services. It's office.
It's almost at the bottom of the 2804 is the yes, warrant
good
number.
Evening, Madam Chair, board members. And your question is?
Who is the temper? Why did we temporarily hire someone?
That is for office administration help.
Okay, thank you.
Just a question on there. I saw that we have apparently a position, and this is not for Mr. Trujillo specifically, but it's more, I guess, a comment to the technical consultants that I've not seen any position statement that's called office manager, and they've cited an office manager as being one of our staff, and I'm curious when the board authorized that. So if you could pass that comment back to the technical consultants, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
And then I note that the technical consultant one for 1 month is almost $12,000, which seems to me, again, somewhat inordinarily high, but I don't have other comments. I would note on item 5C, this is about a contract for environmental services and supportive funding for the redundancy project, just so the public is aware that we're taking that action up as a consent item.
Okay, I'll open it now up to public comment for items on the consent agenda.
Julie Tacker, and just a question, maybe Mr. Trujillo could answer the office manager question, just not sure. The approval of warrants, the payroll seems inordinately high, and I'd like an explanation on that. The approval of minutes, something that's been happening repeatedly at these board meetings is Shirley Gibson calling me out for an $11,000 charge. I'd like to challenge her to prove that number because I cannot get proof of it. I've asked both the city of Arroyo Grande and the district for the invoice that cites that, and in no communication with either of those agencies am I able to get that number, or any number. The concern I have with 5C and the contract for the environmental services is that you only have one bidder. And that's always unfortunate because we would like to see competition. And I'm curious how the RFP was issued and if other consultants considered the RFP and then chose not to participate. The minutes also, sorry, I'm going to jump back. Just let the record reflect that I did file an FPPC complaint against Mayor Scholes also. That was in October of 2016, and that investigation is still going. Last thing with regard to the designation of authority to sign for the district, Mr. Jones is going to be authorized to sign checks. Mr. Jones is not here. We will not be able to have our operational questions about the plant answered, and that seems to me with that responsibility that he can write a check, he could also be here to participate in your board meetings.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the consent agenda?
If I might briefly respond to the speaker's comment, I have also looked into the cost of the allegation that there was $11,000 spent on redactions and public records requests, and that claim is false. The amount that was submitted was very substantially less than that.
Chris Victorine, and I'm also concerned about the payroll expenses on this warrant register. I looked at the previous year, and it's $9,000 more than historically that we've spent. So I'm curious where that extra $7,000 to $10,000 went. I mean, that's an employee, a high-paid employee. I know it says that there's an adjustment from 1.5, but if that was the case, then January somehow would be skewed. Of course, it's very difficult to tell again because we've put Mr. Clemens' settlement in the first week, the first warrant office, the first warrant register. So I'd like an explanation of that extra expense.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Seeing none, I'll bring it back, and if we can get a motion, someone would like to make a motion on this item.
I move that we approve the warrant as presented.
The whole thing, the consent agenda.
Oh, the whole consent agenda. I'm sorry. I move that we can approve the consent agenda as presented.
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to second the motion, but I would ask if our acting administrator has any idea what the additional payroll amount is. Is that something that can be easily explained, or should we wait till the next meeting?
I'm sorry, you have to wait. I wasn't briefed on that particular issue.
Okay. Then I will second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, it passes. 3-2-0. I will go on to our next item, number 6, which is our coming back with the review of the bylaws for approval. This is continued from the last board meeting. And so we have the bylaws with the changes that were made and the additions. So with that, I would ask for public comment. Is there any public comment on the bylaw revision?
Well, I wanted to bring attention to 1.4. where it says the chair and the vice chair of the board shall be elected annually. At the last regular meeting of each calendar year, there was discussion about there being a rotation of the chair, which I think is a very good idea because it's been very contentious the last two elections. The person that was nominated had to second their own nomination at each occasion. And that to me says that the fix is pretty much in. And I think it would be much more fair if the board just rotated the chair each year. So there's no favoritism played. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay. You have public comment?
Julie Tacker, and with regard to the conflict of interest policy, I don't know that you want to change this unless it could be, and your legal counsel could better describe, and I think it's 13, chapter 13, what exactly the new rules are and how they maybe better could be folded into your bylaw. So, again, legal counsel.
Okay, seeing no more public comment, I will bring it back to the board. Anybody want to talk about anything, or are you ready to?
The 1.4 item. It just dawned on me, the board shall be elected annually at the last regular meeting of each calendar year. Frequently, in our other jobs, committee assignments aren't done until the first January meeting. So you don't know who is going to be assigned to.
So you think it should be in, change it to, instead of the last regular meeting, the first meeting of the new year?
Yeah. Or, well, the second, actually.
Another way to solve that issue would be to just have a rotation where the representative from each jurisdiction rotates annually.
I think we talked about that, too, and then we said that we could do the rotation and make it dependent upon the board wanted to or not. And so by leaving it this way, it would be the same thing.
That still leaves out a probability or possibility of changes in personnel.
So what would you like to do?
I'm thinking the second meeting of January at the latest.
What do you think about that?
If that's the majority desire. I think a better way to do it is to have a rotation.
So, Barbara, you just want to...
I think we can try it that way, but if the personnel changes, then it's going to have to... The board composition is going to have to be changed anyway. In January, perhaps.
Okay, so we'll just, if you're okay with that, we can just ask you to change to the second meeting in January. For that, would that...
So that's the board's desire. I'd request a motion and a second, and then a vote on the language.
I move that we change item number 1.4 to the second meeting in January.
I'll second that. We have a roll call, please.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chair Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Is there anything else? I looked through it all and it looks, I don't have anything that needs to be changed. Oh, there is one correction I did make. It's just a typographical. On the last page, page 13, should say page 13 of 13, says 12.
I had a question about that, too. Actually, isn't it a continuation of the items on page 12? And that page is three-quarters blank. So we didn't really need a second page.
I did reformat. And provided
yes.
you the copy.
Okay.
And they're available.
Page 12 of 12, and then page 13. Yeah, so we have to, I think, go through.
Look at the clean copy.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Okay. So I get that's it. So if we can, if anybody would like to make a motion on the bylaws.
I move that we accept the bylaws as revised.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Passes 3-0. Where's my agenda? Okay. That's done. Now we'll go on to the discussion of the personnel policy manual updates. So this is another thing that we're carrying from the last meeting. We're going to continue discussion of the draft revision, and we talked about not spending. We'll spend.
Madam Chair, would you like a brief staff report?
Yes, please.
All right. You have before you tonight a draft of the revised personal policy manual. The manual has been, at least since I've been here, a little over 2 years. A work in progress. It has been reviewed by staff. It's been reviewed by professional HR staff who helped draft some of the changes. There is really, in my opinion, nothing that is unusual or that's not common in other jurisdictions' personnel policy manuals. It was also approved by the union, and I think the reason, without them being here, but speaking for them, I think the reason they approved it is because they've seen similar language in other manuals up and down the Central Coast. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. I want to go ahead and open this up to the public comment.
I would ask one question.
Okay.
Previously, I know the board voted unanimously to consider this two sections at a time at a previous meeting. And so hopefully we can consider the first two sections tonight and maybe go on.
Yeah, I believe that was the direction two meetings ago, but I believe that technical consultant Karp placed the item on the agenda with a proposal after he looked at the tape of the meeting, and I believe that the direction then was to bring it forward tonight for consideration as a whole document. Of course, the board by majority is free to change that direction.
Well, let's see how it goes. I'd like to go ahead and just go through it. Are we ready for public comment now? Is there any public comment on this item?
Chris Victorine, yeah, I was under the impression we were going to do it a couple chapters at a time. And so I looked at the first couple ones, and I saw, first off, in Chapter 2, nepotism should probably be moved to Chapter 5, Employee Relations. And I also noticed that there isn't an equal employment opportunity section, which I think is very important to be in any personnel policy manual. And then I also was looking at the chain of command. It was listed here. And there isn't an office manager, so I'm not sure. That's a new employee, a new position. So I think that should be clarified what the actual chain of command and organization.
What was the second item you mentioned?
The
about equal opportunity. What was it?
Equal employment opportunity. So that's a 1972 law that should be incorporated in it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have public comment on?
Julie Jacker, and when this was before your board, it was December that Mayor Hill went through much of it, describing some of the language that he thought was draconian, and I agree. He made a motion, your board voted unanimously to take two chapters at a time beginning January 20th, 22nd meeting in January, whatever it was. He also asked that perhaps we could look at some other districts. And while the union may have seen similar language at other districts, I can guarantee you, because I have looked at Oceano, Los Osos, Cayucas, and the CSDA, and the language is not anything like what this is in front of you today. The public is at a disadvantage because there is no public comment copy for them tonight. I have my copy that I printed myself at my expense, and I'm not willing to share it. So I think they're at a disadvantage. The other thing that Mr. Karp said at his when he put forth a proposal that you go through it all at once, he said work on it for an hour. He didn't say adopt it tonight. So that's a slightly mischaracterized. Most of the consternation I have over the document is where many times it refers to the chair having authority to spend money. And yes, your technical consultants, your previous administrator, your attorney, and the union all looked at this, and that would violate the Brown Act if the chair could authorize engaging an attorney or engaging a consultant, a human resource specialist, whatever. The chair has no authority. It's the board that has authority. So a search and replace would fix it for me. But it doesn't sound like we're going to have that opportunity a couple of chapters at a time to help you make this document better. Personally, I'd scrap the whole thing, go back to some boilerplate, and make it your own. What's before you is fraught with opinion from Gerhard Huebner.
Is there any other public comment on this item?
Mary Lisa Asciano, this has been on your agenda so many times, I'm tired of reading it. This document isn't for the public and how they're going to run the meeting. This document is how this organization is going to run as a whole. Okay, so whether we have opinions about it or not, I think they need to be taken into consideration and then move along on what you as a board and what policies and procedures you're going to operate under, not what the public's going to operate under. The one thing that I'm happy to see is the nepotism and fraternization policy strengthened. That is a lawsuit waiting to happen for any jurisdiction, for any entity, whether it's private or public. You know, to see that strengthened up so it takes us out of running the risk of being sued again and again and again, right, for not having strong policies, I think is acting very responsible on behalf of the ratepayers. And I do appreciate this. I'd like to see your board, since you've all, I know you have to have read it. Ms. Tacker said Mr. Hill had done it, read it, and redone it. So I know that you're all very, very familiar with it, and I would like to see you move your policies and procedures forward tonight, since it is on the agenda as an action item. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back here. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just for a couple of words. I have a problem with the chair being able to act unilaterally and spend money without the board's knowledge and consent.
Thank you. Mr. Trujillo, can I ask you to respond to that? I didn't see where the board, I don't think the chair can act that way. Doesn't it have to be a vote of the board or to spend money? Can a chair on their own?
Well, I'm going to give you a typical attorney answer. It depends.
Okay.
There are provisions in the policy that would allow the chair to act unilaterally and approve the hiring or retention of professionals when you need a professional type service. That is quite common and necessary because some of these items could be of a personnel nature and they're not suitable to being brought before a board and having a contract authorized before the board. If there are other, so the board does have a purchasing policy manual with the amount set forth as directed by the board that would give the director authority to enter into those contracts within those parameters.
Okay. All right, thank you. Can I also ask the equal employment opportunity question? Do you have any answer to that? It said it wasn't in here?
Yes.
Isn't it covered somewhere in here?
Yes, that's been the law for quite some time now, maybe half a century. So it's really not necessary to repeat it. in a personal policy manual. It is the
it
law.
Is the
it
law.
Applies to everyone.
Okay. All right. And then, excuse me. We're talking up here. I guess that was it. Or I wanted to ask about the chain of command. That was another thing that was brought up. I'm not sure what page it was on.
Okay. Thank you.
2010, page 1.
I've got it all turned in there.
Is that the
2010, page 1.
I don't see it.
You
here.
Have it? Yeah. 2010? I got 2030.
Like
oh, that chart.
Yeah.
You have it right there. Let me look at it. Okay, so we have. So I'm not sure. There was a question one of the members of the public had about the chain of command. And I don't see it. It's it looks.
They commented that it had an office manager position on there, and I certainly don't see it.
There's not one, right?
Correct.
Right.
You haven't closed the public communication, so I think I put my little 2 cents in here. Obviously, the confusion pretty much verifies why this probably should be taken a couple of chapters at a time. And as Mr. Hill said, and as people in this audience that have been here for meeting after meeting, we know that that was the direction of the board. I don't know why Mr. Karp felt he needed to move away from that direction. He was given that direction. Last week, he said, let's do this in an hour. So what's the deal? Get it done right. Don't force yourself through it. Take it a couple chapters at a time. Make sure it's done right. And the questions that are brought forward in those chapters can be answered. And obviously, you've read through it, but you still had questions. You didn't. You couldn't answer the questions that the public said. Obviously, you don't know what was in the document.
Well, I'm just going to add that. The reason we're here is to do this. I was trying to give the public, get their questions answered for them. They ask questions, and that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to, yes?
Well, my question was that the direction was,
you want to come on up here so I can.
Well, technically, we should refer our questions to the office manager, and there isn't an office manager on
position
the,
on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my question.
All right. Thank you. So, and I don't think anyone's confused. We're just trying to go through it like we're supposed to. So I know Mr. Karp said that we would spend an hour on it if we needed to and not go any longer. So the first two chapters, do you have things that you want to talk about on the first two chapters?
Yes, I do.
I'm closing public comment. Thank you.
Commenter indicated they were tired of reading this document, and I can certainly sympathize with that because it's fraught with grammatical errors and other issues. We were urged to move forward tonight, but I think this adopting this would be actually a large step backward for the district. Looking at the actual amount of the document, manual applies to all employees except temporary employees. Not sure why it would not apply to temporary employees as well as regular employees.
Excuse me, if I may interrupt.
What page you are?
I'm sorry, it's 1,000.
Same question.
Page 1,000.
Director Hill, if you can point to what paragraphs you're dealing with, so I could try to follow along.
I apologize. I'll certainly do that. This is item 1000, purpose of the policies, and it is the second paragraph on page 1000, number 1. A bit confusing. It says, except as provided this manual applies to all employees, and we've gone to the trouble of strike out regular employees. But then we say, do not apply to members of the board, contract employees, volunteer personnel such as advisory committees, person engaged under contract to provide expert, professional, technical, or other services, or to temporary employees.
So what was your about temporary?
Why would it not apply to temporary employees?
Except this provided the manual applies to all employees.
Madam Chair, would you like me to answer as we go along,
or yes,
we
ought
to wait until we? I could answer them all at one time at the end, at whatever the discretion of the board is.
Why don't you do it while we're on the page right
okay.
now?
Okay. Yeah. So it this only applies to permanent full-time employees because of the employer relationship. When you have a full-time employee, they have a property right in their job, so that is why you cannot arbitrarily dismiss someone, because the courts have said that they have a property right into their job. So there's a lot more protections built in, and these policies are not meant to provide additional protections to temporary employees, such as appeal rights and so forth.
Okay, thank you.
I understand that. In the same paragraph, we highlight that it doesn't apply to contract employees. Then we go on to say, persons engaged under contract to provide expert, professional, technical, or other services. How is that different than contract employees?
It's I'm not sure I understand the distinction of, but I can't explain the purpose of that, and that is you certainly wouldn't want to give your contract employees, such as myself, any due process rights to exercise these elements that are in this policy. That's why there's carved out for at-will employees, professional employees. That relationship is governed by a contract, which we all do not have property rights in these positions.
I certainly agree and endorse that, but again, I wonder why we say contract employees, and then we say, apparently someone felt it necessary to say persons engaged under contract to provide expert, professional, technical, or other services. So it just seems to me to be redundant.
It's just covering a little more things that might come up, I think, is all. You have contract employees, and then persons engaged under contract to provide expert. It's just making sure.
Just redundant. Item 1010, policy amendments, is on the next page, 1010, number 1. And paragraph 2 there, announcement of changes to these policies will be made through standard communication channels. Those are never defined. And I recall numbers of instances where this district has had issues with quote unquote standard communication channels that failed. And so I would suggest changing that to by copy to each employee. So it's
say
announce in item 2, the first sentence.
Right, but where would you put by copy?
Announcement of changes will be made by copy to each employee. I think something as important as our policies should be distributed to the employees and well known and understood. So, you know, employee meetings, that kind of thing seems to be a little bit informal, if you will. And I'm not confident that all of our employees would be reached unless they were given a copy of the policy.
Well, it always also adds that advance notice to every employee may not always be possible for whatever reason.
I have an issue with that, too, because if someone's coming into the plant, it's not like we have thousands of employees. So, you know, we've got less than two handfuls of employees. You can count them on less than your fingers. And I don't think it would be challenging to provide each one a copy.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Would you like to make some comments on that? So, as Director Nichols pointed out, the very last sentence says that it shall become effective even though personal notice was not provided to one or more of the district employees. So the goal always is to inform all the employees, and now that you have a union, mandatory, to make sure that that notice goes out. But in a personnel policy manual, you do not want to create additional burdens that the agency for because of our staffing or cannot meet. So in the event that one employee was on vacation or was unavailable on a workers' comp leave, if you were to put that in there, you essentially could invalidate this policy that the administrators are trying to implement because notice was not given to every single employee. But that is what they always strive to do. So you want to give you don't want to tie your hands. You want to give it some broad leeway. But the Director Hill's comments are correct that you want to try to get every employee notice.
Right.
Actually, with due respect, that kind of highlights my concern. If someone is on, I don't have a problem with the policy becoming effective, but let's say someone was on disability or someone was on some kind of long-term leave or they were on vacation and the administrator just forgot to tell them about it. I don't believe that those, while the policy should take effect at a finite point, and I'll have another comment about that, it would seem to me that we should ensure that our employees are well informed. And I think the best way to do it, again, is by copy to each employee, and that could be done on the employee's next return to work day if they are on some kind of leave. I don't want anybody to be blindsided by policies that were changed without being informed.
With the district having the union, doesn't the union makes every effort to notify the employees when they have any policy changes?
Not all of our permanent employees are union members.
May I ask a question here? announcement of changes will be made through standard communication channels. What exactly would the policy, would standard communication channels be in the district?
As Director Hill pointed out, that's not a defined term. So if you would go to Webster's Dictionary and the past practice of the district, that would either be by written email or by written memorandum or now emails to employees.
Okay. And also it is, speaking about announcement of changes to as a policy amendments, is that not correct? Or just any change in a meeting date or whatever?
Some changes will require union participation and meet and confer. Others, which are management rights, would not need that, and the district administrator would be able to impose rules that he feels or she feels is necessary to run the operation.
Okay. That clarifies things for me.
Okay.
Let me offer a further change that might answer the concerns. Announcement, I would suggest that it reads as follows. Announcement of changes will be made by copy to each employee on their next regular workday. I think that would... and then the last sentence could say the amendment will become effective even though personal notice was not provided to one or more of the district's employees at the time. That way the policy would take effect for everyone except someone who was on leave and didn't know about it, and we would guarantee that they would be informed on their next regular workday when they returned.
I think that it says that here, standard communication channels, and when they return to work, there should be a notice somewhere. That
again, I have grave concerns over quote-unquote standard communication channels.
Sure. Well, okay. Yeah, if you want to make them.
Just from having been involved in this kind of thing, the most certain way, if you have an employee issue, whatever, is when you issue a new policy or whatever, have that employee sign for it that they've received it. Then you are totally, completely protected. Do what is already there, but then add that as the last protection for the district. Because then there is no way they can say they didn't know about something. And that protects the district and the employee.
So. Okay, thank you. So is there anything you think that...
Moving on, paragraph 4, except in emergency situations, et cetera, and then down to the end. The proposed modifications or deletions shall then, at a second meeting of the Board of Directors, be presented for final adoption. And I would suggest become effective 14 days later, but I'm not... 14 days is arbitrary, and I don't, if anyone suggests a different length of time, but the point of that is to allow the district administrator to prepare to distribute that to the staff. So it could become effective 3 days later, or 7, or 14, or 21, or whatever the board thinks is appropriate. But I would suggest some...
Second meeting comment, doesn't that? Instead of saying at a second meeting, you want to say give a day's amount of days?
That would be my suggestion, yes.
What about it, Gil? Do you think second meeting of the board, should we? I don't know if we want to put a day. Number of day limit on that, because we don't know what's, you know, I think what it says is probably the way it should stay.
The language as I interpreted it at a second meeting of the board would mean 2 weeks before it would become final. So it already, in my opinion, it's already, a 2-week provision is already in there. But the board's free to impose additional time if that's what the board majority would like.
My inclination would be the fewer words, the better.
I think the second meeting of the board of directors is fine because that is 2 weeks. And
okay. Moving on then to definitions. There's a number of definitions that I would expect to see that are not here, but I'll start with the first one. This is on page 2000, number one. At-will employees. Here we have yet a different discussion of contract employee. An individual appointed as either a probationary employee, a contract employee, or an individual who holds employment with the district under contract, which defines the terms and conditions of employment. That's different than the last redundancy about contract employees. I don't understand why we state that it applies, the definition applies to a contract employee, and then we go on and define some other contract employees. With my colleague's disdain for additional words, I would hope that these redundant statements could be removed.
Well,
you're saying that item number two regarding a contract employee is redundant with what other section, Jim?
An individual who holds employment with the district under contract, which defines the terms and conditions of employment.
I don't see where that
either
well, wording is.
It's,
in number one.
So
okay.
You've already thrown a wide net around contract employees.
Yeah.
I don't
okay.
know why we're redundantly discussing
okay.
some subset thereof.
So this
I think there is
two,
a lot of redundancy.
Number two is
in this.
Is probably doesn't need to be there at all because it states it up here in number one.
Additional redundancy. Thank you.
Yes.
Would you like me to?
Yes. When you ask why this is in here twice, you can maybe give us an explanation.
Well, the first reason is that this was not drafted by scratch. We took an existing document and worked with it. When you're defining terms, you know, there really isn't any substantive reason to change these definitions. The broader, the better they are. It leads to less confusion. But if we're tasked with that, we can go through this document as an English professor and rewrite sentences and reduce redundancy, but that would be quite an expensive endeavor.
It's if somebody
and this document has already... cost the district.
If somebody wants to look up contract employee, they'll go to contract employee, and then they won't, and they'll read what it is. And then if they're at will employee, they'll see. If it says it again, it does. It just makes more explanation.
With all due respect, we've been informed how many human resources professionals ad infinitum have worked on this, and this is the most discouraging document that I could imagine being presented for our consideration here. If it's cost us a tremendous amount, somebody's not watching the store.
I understand where you're coming from on that. And these documents always seem to me to be so packed with detail and definition and so on and so forth that nobody really reads through them word for word for word for word as they exist. One of the things I noticed in here is this has a definition of regular employers. Regular employees over and over and over again in the document. Regular is crossed out and full-time is replaced. Which one are we using? Or can you use one in one case and one in another case? If we're going to be that picky about it, they basically mean the same thing, we're going to have to go through this word by word and it'll take forever.
Why I didn't want to take it in any more than two sections at a time.
Do you have any more sections you want to bring up?
Typically a grammatical, and I'll just point that out. This is in paragraph three, the last sentence. Consequently, no overtime, standby time, or compensatory time would be provided for working beyond a 40-hour work week. unless prior approval by the district administrator. That's very odd grammar. I would say without prior approval by the district administrator. And the reason I bring up that point is later on in the document, we're going to see that employees are going to be asked to use correct grammar and so forth. So I think that if we're going to ask the employees to use correct grammar, that it's incumbent on us that a document such as this also use correct grammar. Part-time employee. I don't get this at all. Hourly employee, an individual appointed to an allocated position, scheduled to work less than 30 hours per week. Are not our union represented employees hourly employees? Many of them are full-time. Then we have a definition of part-time down here. I'm not sure these appear to overlap. I don't get it.
I do agree with you on that one. They seem, I can't see what the difference in the terminology means.
I think it's breaking down every employee you have. It's just like the hourly employee can be someone that's hired to just do a temporary job. And
excuse me, Madam Chair. So let me remind the board that these are definitions. So if you were to change the definitions, we would have to do a search through the whole document to find where those words were
yes.
used and then replace them or delete them, which would require additional time.
Right. That's why I think we can't get quite as picky as we might like to on it.
No, that's what you said.
So we should accept something that's basically garbage just because it would take a little bit of effort to make it right. I don't subscribe to that philosophy.
I would hardly consider this basically garbage. I don't.
Well, let's look further. More grammar. A regular employee is one who has been hired to fill vacant, allocated, full-time or part-time. They deleted the article A, should stay there.
No. What page to fill a vacant, right, number six, to fill a vacant
okay.
allocated full-time.
Okay.
It's the A.
Yeah. I would point out that the difference between an hourly employee and a part-time employee is a part-time employee works exactly 30 hours per week, no more, no less, because an hourly employee works less than 30 hours per week. So if someone works 29 and a half hours per week, they're an hourly employee, but if it goes to 30, then they become part-time. Odd. Probationary employee, number 8. Observe and evaluate an employee's second sentence, I'm sorry. It's actually the first sentence on the third line. Observe and evaluate an employee's competence, performance, and ability to perform assigned duties. Why not competence and performance? How is ability to perform assigned duties, which was added in here, or performance was added in here, something was added in. Competence and ability to perform assigned duties, how is that different than performance? Again, I don't get it. New and returning employees on the next line. Not sure what a returning employee is. Is that someone who's re-employed? I'm looking at, we have a definition number 9, which is re-employed individuals, and then 11 returning employees. New and returning employees shall be regarded as probationary. New and returning. Previously employed in good standing. separated from the district other than by layoff, so probably someone who resigned or perhaps had a medical issue. Rehired by the district does not meet the definition of a reemployed individual. I just wonder why those employees would go into a probationary period.
Well, up here it says no probationary period. Returning, reemployed individuals, okay. Returning employees, okay.
So returning employees should be regarded as probationary for the first year of employment. Seems unduly long, but in addition, it may be extended an additional 6 months at the discretion of the administrator. Would seem to me if we're going to have any kind of probationary period for a returning employee that 6 months ought to be enough. I don't know why a returning employee would have to be subject to up to 18 months of probation. That just seems to me to be unreasonable.
Well, what I think, you know, this whole document has gone over with the union.
It's been gone over by people who should have read it. The union probably just said, well, if you're going to do that, I think human resources professionals would be embarrassed of this. Reemployed individuals, they are not subject to an probationary period. Again, the incorrect article.
That needs to be changed to A.
And I point that out because, as we'll see in our job descriptions, use of correct grammar is something that we expect of our employees. Retired annuitant. Item 10 on page 2000-2. Retired annuitant is one who's retired from CalPERS and is eligible for hire on a hourly basis.
Okay, so I'll change it to N.
I mean, there is a device called spell check, and clearly this document has never been through it. Returning employees, probationary, substitute employee. I don't understand why we're subtracting this. A substitute employee is one who, at the request of the district administrator or his or her designee, fills any permanent position which remains.
Oops, now where are you?
I'm sorry, I'm on page 2000, number 2. This is the former item 9 that's been stricken at the bottom of the page. I would reinstitute that. This would seem to potentially load us up with numbers of employees that are probably not necessary. Moving on then to page 20101, there's our famous chain of command. I would hope that we could come up with something like district organization. Then I note that district legal counsel's apparently been stricken, and the bookkeeper secretary is just floating out in space. I'm not sure how these relate. There's usually lines of organized progression.
Well, I think this is. They just aren't lined up in a row.
I guess it's a free form thing. not sure that's the best way to run an organization. Authorized positions, again, I don't see office manager here at all. I would note for the record that we made a commitment some time ago to, there was a grievance filed about operator three classifications, and we made a commitment that's long overdue to our employees at that time. Wastewater plant superintendent, I'm wondering if the lab technician, this is on the next page, which says 2010, but it doesn't, there's 2010-1 and then 2010. I don't understand why there's two diagrams. This one has more, this one has defined lines, I guess, of organization, not the freeform style on the previous page.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, if I had to guess, I would say that the first page, 2010-1, is a redline version that shows what has been stricken. And then if you turn the page to 2010, chain of command, you have a clean copy. So I think you should look at the clean copy and work off that.
So we're eliminating the district legal counsel.
Apparently so.
But why is that? Do you know?
I'm sorry. It's a contract position. I serve at the pleasure of the board. I think the chain of command is for full-time employees.
Well, it's interesting that the document doesn't apply to the board of directors specifically, nor does it apply to contractors, which would include legal counsel, yet it seems that we find it necessary on one page to include both those groups, and on the next, only one. So it's, again, inconsistent. Nepotism and fraternization policy 2015, number one, purpose. Purpose of this policy is to establish the policy. I'm certainly glad that was pointed out. I probably wouldn't have been able to understand it otherwise, but I think that's redundant. Definitions is used in this policy. Cohabitation applies to those employees who live together, share room and board, or sire children without being married to one another. My son has a roommate. They basically cohabit, but they live together. They share room and board. They don't sire children, and they're not married. So would they be considered cohabitants?
I think cohabitation, male-female.
Doesn't say that.
You're right.
The term dating, yeah, right. So division is defined as an administrative division of the sanitation district. What exactly is that? This is purported to be a definition. I don't understand what we're trying to define. Can you tell me what an administrative division is? Looking at this definition, I can't tell you.
No, I'd have to search through the document to find out where it is used.
Wouldn't it be the office, the administration, and then the operations division is
right.
The field?
It's a difference between management and the operations.
Not well spelled out.
Jim, can we maybe agree that this is a boilerplate document?
No, absolutely not. boilerplate documents are far better written than this.
I can't hear a thing with the service back here. Service,
yeah. All right.
Well, again, those are definitions that I don't know what.
A significant other. That's another challenge. Nepotism. It's an express finding of the district that the situation specified in this section, the employment of relatives as that term is defined herein, is contrary to appropriate district goals of safety and efficiency. Purpose of this section is to define the specific circumstances and delineate the manner in which such employment issues will be addressed. I'm aware of many other jurisdictions that have individuals who fall under these definitions as employees that cause no problems whatever. There have been commenters who sought to release some of our employees under the guise of a nepotism policy when I think darker motives were
all right.
And play.
That's not necessary. You know what we're doing.
It is found that a business purpose exists. We should be able to discuss that. Okay, effective post-employment marriage or creation of other, quote, relative status of district employees. Determining rules and regulations governing the employment of district employees who become related is defined herein. Related is not defined herein. It's not defined in the 1,000 definitions, and it's not defined in this section. So it says related is defined herein. Where's that?
You want to know what?
Go ahead. Excuse me.
Yes, this is at the bottom,
the bottom of
2015-2.
Page 2.
And at the very last paragraph, the first sentence says, in determining rules and regulations. Actually, I thought we were determining policy. Governing the employment of district employees who become related as defined herein. Where's the definition of related?
If you read to the last sentence, it does refer to people deemed related as a result of marriage, i.e. in-laws, or for business reasons or supervision. So if you want it as a standout definition.
This is only intended to apply to in-laws.
No, that's not correct.
No.
Then
that's
I would
just
suggest
where it was
that
deleted.
The definition is deficient.
It's just giving an example. If you read on,
the district is guided by the principles enunciated in the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. I would suggest that that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. The district is bound by those principles. We're not guided by them. No, it isn't the same thing.
All right.
Where for business reasons of supervision, safety, security, I guess they're going to take something home from the plant? Is that the security we're worried about? Potential conflicts of interest. Involves potential conflicts of interest. I don't recall seeing a definition of conflict of interest either, or even a reference to some other definition. Then, in order, this is on page 2015, number 3, bullet item 2. In order to implement these policies and where the above circumstances exist and mandate that two spouses or other relatives shall not work in a prohibited relationship. Question, what is working in a prohibited relationship?
What was stated?
We go to
Madam Chair and Director.
Here's my issue. We go to the trouble to define terms as poorly as we do that, and then we start using all of these other terms that aren't defined, that are totally nebulous, and give it just makes a joke out of our policy. Either we should have a policy that we're going to stick to and enforce, or we should have nothing at all.
Madam Chair, Board of Directors, you'll notice that the nepotism policy was taken verbatim from some other document. It's all new language because we did not have that policy. It's fairly common to have a nepotism policy for a government agency. These policies are not perfect. I wouldn't recommend that we try to make them perfect unless you had a lot of money that you wanted to spend. I think, in my opinion, the document is much more usable, provides much more guidance to the employees than what the original document with which we started with. And that really was what we were tasked with doing, is to bring an outdated policy up to code. I believe that the contractors who hired to do this did the best job they could, but we're not going to be perfect.
Yeah, this appears to be probably something Mr. Huebner dredged up. Continuing on 2015, number 3, point 4 at the last paragraph. Apparently the second section, if one of the employees does not voluntarily resign, they can be discharged by the administrator. Married or other related employees may continue to be employed within the same district department, there's that word again, subject to approval by the district administrator. So first it says we're going to have a policy, then it says no, we're going to blow off the policy and just leave it up to the whim of the administrator. And again, I would suggest that the whim of the administrator has got this district into a lot of trouble in the recent past. However, any such continuing employment is predicated upon both spouses or other similarly situated relatives as defined in this policy not reporting to the same immediate supervisor, not being supervised by each other. I think I understand the intent of that language not being supervised by each other, but I would suggest that it'd be more clear to say one not being supervised by the other. I don't know of any instance where both people are supervisors of the other one. I've never seen that.
So it says not being supervised by each other, and what would you want it to say? The same immediate supervisor?
One not being supervised by the other.
One not being supervised by the other.
Fraternizing. Don't go near the water cooler. Romantic relationships between co-employees in the same department are prohibited. Employees in the same department. Well, we talked about divisions. Here we're throwing in a new term, department. This is just, if there was any intent to this policy, I would suggest the intent is to be confusing. On 2015-5, the second paragraph is numbered 3, and that again has not being supervised by each other. I would again suggest one not being supervised by the other. Relationship prohibited by the policy. Then in the paragraph on 2015-5 that's just above employee duty, the last line, that are permissible pursuant to existing district policies and procedures to address conduct that may is negatively impacting the work environment.
That is negatively. Take out the may.
I would suggest taking out the may.
You know that one, Gil?
That is negatively impacting,
right.
Yeah. Are we going to proofread the grammar and the spelling and the everything in this, or are we just
to
have somebody,
when it's
redone without being in draft form, we could expect somebody to
proofread
it? Who is a professional proofreader?
There's so many errors in here.
I agree.
This is obviously at some point an electronic document that's been printed. And clearly spell check has been bypassed here. And I'm not really confident that it would be used in the future. That would be one start, but having certainly someone at least read through it to check for obvious errors would be, I would think, a minimum.
Well, I think that's something we can...
Employee duty, then, at the bottom of the page is a little bit bizarre. Employees under this policy shall promptly notify their supervisor either in person or through the chain of command. Don't supervisors directly supervise an individual? In other words, how far up a chain of command would one be expected to go before they got to their supervisor? Supervising implies to me some direct responsibility to organize and direct the activities of staff members. So I'm not clear how they would contact their supervisor through the chain of command. Does that mean that they go to the district administrator first and then the person that gives them day-to-day direction? Or that they go to the board of directors first and then they go to the administrator or the plant superintendent? Is that how they go through the chain of command? I'm not clear on that. It's very unusual.
Are you reading that paragraph? Well, the employee duty?
Yeah, that's
the wording on this one that he was just reading.
On 2015.
Notify their supervisor no later than the end of the next business day, either in person or through the chain of command. So what would that is? You notify your super. Who would be the? Your supervisor?
Your supervisor should be the next level up on the quote unquote chain of command.
Right. I didn't realize that was a question. I thought it was commentary.
I just was wondering what you thought.
So the purpose of the document is so an employee can easily understand it, because this is what governs the relationship between our employees. So someone needs to pick up this document, read employee duty, read that it says the chain of command, I think that's fairly clear. We could always try to make it clearer, but I think any employee would realize what their duties are under that paragraph, in my opinion.
Respectfully, I would disagree with that opinion. I think that it should be able to be read and understood by individuals that we would hire as licensed operators at the plant and other members of staff so that they could easily understand what's expected of them.
I thought it was quite clear.
Recruitment 2020, this is on page 2020-1. The district will only solicit applications when position openings exist, comma, when letters of resignation or retirement have been tendered by employees, comma, or, that's a superfluous word, when vacancies occur, or, another, after, maybe when new position openings are approved by the board of directors. Completion. The next sentence. Upon completion of such evaluation, what evaluation is it that we're talking about? This is page 2020, number one, okay. The second paragraph, about the middle of the paragraph.
Oh, here we go. Completion yeah. of such evaluation. Okay.
What evaluation are we talking about?
The applications. We've already notified of its final applicants.
Well, if we're talking about applications, we should say applications. This doesn't say that. It says that upon completion of such evaluation.
Well, they are approved by the board of directors, and then it says the approval is the evaluation.
Yeah, it looks like there's been a paragraph, maybe some statements or some portions of the paragraph have been deleted, perhaps accidentally, and maybe two paragraphs have been joined together because, frankly, this doesn't make sense.
So you want to change the word evaluation.
Well, I'd like to know what the... Well, I think the context of it is
what their the evaluation of the applications that they looked at, right?
I don't know.
That's what I read it to.
The board of directors and the district administrator are the appointing authority to open a recruitment upon completion that of an evaluation of the recruitment.
Okay.
The board will be notified of final applicants for exempt employees.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what it says.
Sometimes you.
And how will they evaluate
I would like to point out that all deletions and all additions are shown on this document, on the page we're reading. So the strikeouts were originally there, have been deleted.
Right.
The underlines have been added, and the upon completion of such evaluation is original language from the existing document.
Right.
So it used to say, the district will only solicit applications when position openings exist, when letters of resignation or retirement have been tendered by employees, or when vacancies or new position openings are anticipated. Upon completion of such evaluation, doesn't make sense either.
That's right.
I guess we intended that all of the changes and strikeouts and so forth are identified, but perhaps some text was inadvertently dropped. I don't know.
I think it reads through to you.
The last sentence in paragraph one, if two people are hired on the same day for jobs that have the same rate of pay, it must be determined who was hired first based on the date the employment letter is issued. What if both letters are issued the same day?
What if two people are hired on the same day for different rates of pay, the employee with the higher pay rate would be deemed the employee hired first.
based on the date the employment letter is issued. So is there a chance there would be, if two people are hired on the same day for jobs that have the same rate of pay, it must be determined who was hired first based on the date the employment letter was issued. It says they're on the same day, so it'd have to be on the time if you want to.
Yes, and I don't know that we put time of issue on our letters. This stated the coin toss, which, you know, may be a reasonable thing to do, but...
The differentiation, I think, is that they are hired on the same day for jobs that have the same rate of pay.
So this is an anticipated condition.
And then it's changed to two people who are hired on the same day for different rates of pay.
Well,
this
is a condition that may sound odd, but it's something that we've gone to great lengths to discuss. If two people are hired on the same day for jobs that have the same rate of pay, perhaps operator threes, must be determined who was hired first based on the date the employment letter is issued. Well, my question is, what if that is coincidental as well?
Then they both have the same anniversary date.
They would, but we...
Excuse me, Madam Chair, if I may interject. The purpose behind that particular language is if there, in the unfortunate event that you had to have layoffs and seniority, that would create a problem. So the person who revised this was attempting to make it a little clearer so that that problem does not exist. Any district administrator who is hiring two people at the same time would need to read this section, need to realize that if layoffs do become a reality, you'd have to pick one over the other, and this is the method you would do it by.
That's exactly correct. We're endeavoring to set the seniority of employees, and it would seem to me that, again, based on the date the employment letter is issued, so that could lead to favoritism by the administrator. Says, I like this guy better, so I'm going to send him the letter today, and the next guy, I'm only going to send him the letter tomorrow because I don't like him as much. It seems to me that a coin toss is a more fair way to do it. Employment of relatives, item number 3 on page 2020-1. First sentence, not eligible for initial hire during the district member's term on the board. District member. I think they're either attempting to say the board member or the district director's term. One or the other, but district member is a term that it's not defined here anywhere, and I've never heard that term used. So I'm not sure who that's endeavoring to.
Well, district member's term on the board means the board, a director on the board.
Then why don't we say that?
Because I know what it means.
No, it doesn't.
What, well, what do you want it to say? What do you think it should say?
Board members.
For initial hire during the board member's term on the board?
That would be fine. That's clear.
Okay.
So continuing on, 2020 number 2, last.
I think we're going to need to take a break here pretty soon.
Well, it's been suggested that we don't go over an hour, and we've
right.
probably...
I think we're about ready.
Near an hour, so it may be time to take a break, I would concur.
Okay.
Why don't we finish 2020? A couple more. Well, I guess we're just going to take a break.
Did you have another page on this 2020 on page 3?
Yeah, that's right.
Anything on this page, Jim?
Let's see. There's a reference to section 5060, which I've not yet looked at, on the bottom paragraph of 2020-2. And I basically don't have comments on, well, 2020-3, equal opportunity employment at the bottom of the page. It's paragraph 8, equal opportunity employment, the third line. It says, sex including pregnancy, childbirth, and related medical conditions. And then there's a closed paren. I believe that the intent is to have an opening paren before the word including. So it would say national origin, religion, sex, paren, including pregnancy, childbirth, and related medical conditions. That's my last comment on 2020.
Okay, I think we'll take a 10-minute break, if that's okay. We'll be back here at 10 to 8. Okay, I'll call the meeting back to order. And we left off, I think we were done looking over the procedures. And I think I'm ready. Are you, did you have any more to say, Jim?
No, not on those issues.
So I think that these policies and procedures have been written up, and I agree there is a lot of little grammar and spelling and things like that that we really need to correct. But as, and I don't know if that's a something that, something you could run it through to correct those things, or someone proofread it to get the A's and the, you know, get it. Because I think any document coming out should have the good grammar and spelling.
Yes, with
absolutely.
The,
I mean,
with the typos and the
all
periods
that needs
and
to
the
be.
Commas, that's the secretary can correct those administratively,
right.
Or the clerk. Anything of a substantive matter, you'd have to make a motion,
so
vote on it, and then if it, depending on what sections it deals with,
well, like
you may
with
have
this,
to go back to the
like this,
union.
Well, one example, the not being supervised by each other, changing that to one not supervised by the other. I mean, if we were to change little things like that, that wouldn't bring it back, would it? That's just like grammatical. I don't know.
Yes, you could make those type of changes tonight as long as it's not substantive. If it changes the meaning, then we would have to go back to possibly review it with the employees.
What my concern about the substantive thing is that this was written by, you know, this. We had a human resources professional 30 years, so I checked into, you know, what went on, and then the union approved it, district council approved it, so if we were to go in and try to change, there's a reason the language is in here, and it's because these people have worked up and down the state of California for years, and in order to protect this district, I think there's certain language and things that have to be presented in a policy and procedure manual that professionals, you know, it's in there for a reason.
With all due respect, I doubt that much of this is terms of art. And I'm not sure who the HR professional was. Was there one person that had a particular...
I believe it was Laura from HR Services. Was one of the persons.
May have had... I don't think there was an HR person that...
Excuse me, we're talking up here.
Cumulatively reviewed this document. And I thank you, Chair Austin, because it is difficult to hear when there's conversations
thank
going
you.
On in the room. I appreciate your intervention. But I'm not confident that there wasn't a senior HR person, if you will, look at this.
So what?
So I would move that the changes that I enumerated be incorporated into the document.
Are you ready for a second, or do you want to discuss this more? I'm going to stick with what I believe to be in the best interest of this whole district and in our liability moving forward. And I think that if we were to make big changes and it goes back to the union, it goes back through the council, it's going to cost, we're going to have more legal fees, and then we'll get complaints about the legal fees. When I think, you know, when reading this language, if we correct that, you know, you made a lot of good points on the grammatical things and the spellings and things like that, if we correct that. But I don't see any reason to change any of the meat of the document.
Well, with due respect, I think where we get ourselves in potential liability is when the quote-unquote meat of the document, where's the beef? So when we have terms that are used arbitrarily without definition, things like that, I'm not used to seeing those kinds of oversights in documents that are prepared by professionals.
If you want to go back, what exact, I'm trying to remember where I wrote down. What was that? What was the main thing that you just don't?
Well, prohibited relationships comes to mind.
Okay.
Something that is stated that it's defined and it isn't defined. That's one.
I wrote that down. It's in
this. This thing is so painful to go through that I...
Well,
hope
I
we
think
don't
when
have
it's
to do
all
it more than once.
Done.
my personal feeling is that the prohibited relationships makes common sense insofar as the rest of the staff seeing favoritism or expecting favoritism or presuming favoritism. She's not doing that this job because he said he's her boyfriend, and so we've been through that, and it has been resolved, and I think we need to stick to this.
I know you had a problem with, like, different definitions, but I don't see if it's repeated hourly employee, regular employee, it's just breaking down. If it goes back into the others, I don't see any problem with that. So I really don't see any need to change any of the wording other than the corrections of the very carefully go through and check the spelling and the grammar, because there were different things that could be changed.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, if I may make a few comments. This really is a living document. Good practice would require that we bring it back at least once a year with updates from recent case law or statutes. This will not be your only opportunity to make grammatical or suggest grammatical changes or other. So the question really is do you want to have this implemented so it gives the guidance now, or do you want
we
to
want to bring it, we didn't
bring
we
it
only
back
go through
with
part of it, so
changes.
We need to go through more of it, right? Don't you want to go through? Mm-hmm.
I guess it would be the board's preference if we want to approve some portion of it or reject some portion of it or look at it all at once. That would be.
Can we get all the typos and things corrected and bring it back? Let us look at it. Can that be done?
Yes, of course.
Before the next, we want to do it at the next meeting, or what do you think? I don't know what.
I wouldn't recommend that. When this document is approved, it should be approved as a whole.
Right.
You can certainly take it piecemeal, as you did tonight, and discuss chapter by chapter. But at the end of the day, it should be one motion to approve whatever document the board wishes to approve.
Okay, so we need to bring it back then, right? We need to bring it back then to go over the rest of it, because I'm sure we didn't only went over the first few pages, right?
A couple sections.
Yeah.
So there is a motion on the table.
Jim made a motion. What was your
with
motion?
Changes presented by Director Hill. So the board would have to give us direction if you want us to make those changes and bring it back, what's the board's pleasure?
Okay, well, there's no second on that motion, so what I believe we probably just want to bring this document back next time, go over some more of it, or
including this, the 2000 series that we've gone halfway through?
Yeah, we'll start on the next section.
Or start where we left off at 2030. Mm-hmm.
I would hope we could start where we left off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what we'll do. We'll bring it back. Let's make a motion. Someone make a motion, please.
Move that we bring the document back at the next meeting, and we can continue discussion from the point we left off.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay. That finishes 6B. Now we'll go to another item, which is the relocation of district funds within the county. So I need a staff report.
Good evening, Madam Chair. This is a request to basically transfer appropriations inside the county district budget. The service and supplies account has reached 74%. Our capital outlay is at 29%. This is primarily due because the cost of design of the redundancy project was assigned entirely to the 17-18 fiscal year budget, and actually the design will not be completed until the 18-19 fiscal year. So the funds must be reallocated from the service and supplies and other charges categories in order to properly track the expenditures. The reallocated funds will cover the actual expenses and conform to district budget for the fiscal year 17-18.
Okay,
if there's any questions, let me know.
I don't think I have any questions. I looked it over. I think it's, we need to do it. So, do you have anything?
I'll wait to hear public what the
comment.
Public
yes, let's do public comment on this item, please. Does anybody has public comment?
Julie Tacker, and I am intrigued by the idea, not idea, the statement that the design is not going to be complete till this year. We understand that. I would like, as maybe not part of this item, but as part of the administrator's report, that you ask for a status of the design, how many of the, how much of the work's been done so far. And my only concern is that, it's actually not my only concern, it's many concerns, and they all stem back to the state of the district's finances overall, not necessarily with the county funds. You're not getting cash reports, you don't have audits, and the last thing that was before your board that you received and filed, I think, was a mess. So, I think you need some forensics on your finances, and you individually need to fully understand where the district is right now. You did have a rate increase specifically for redundancy and some other operations, but how much money is going to redundancy? A lot of these overages and the reason for this is due to the recent history. You've had to settle with your administrator, settle with your superintendent, exorbitant legal costs, investigations into nothing. And this is collateral damage from a year plus of Mr. Huebner.
Anyone else? Seeing none. Okay. Bring it back here. Would anybody want to make any comments, or you want to be in motion to move on this item?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I note that this is reported with budget revisions, unanticipated expenses, including funding for personnel investigations, associated attorney fees, separation settlements, and technical consultants. I've routinely voted against the self-appointed consultant attorney self-aggrandizement that has gone on here under the guise of personnel investigations without the board approval. That's an example of the chair, Mr. Scholes, at the time acting unilaterally without the consent of the full board. And it's unacceptable, and trying to backfit some cover for that is unacceptable. Mr. Scholes authorized that without board approval, yet he meddled in personnel affairs. The thing is repugnant, and I cannot and will not support this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Barbara, do you have any comments? Or
I think we need to do what it's necessary to do to keep things operating.
Are you prepared to make a motion?
Yes. I move that we authorize reallocation of district funds within the county.
And
as delineated in the recommendation.
Okay.
And authorize the chair to sign it?
Yes. Authorize the chair to sign it. Sign the letter and send it.
I'll second the motion. We have a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
We have a roll call, please?
Roll call, please, yes.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Emphatically no, with prejudice.
Chairman Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries 2-1.
Okay, that brings us to our next item, 6D, the technical consultants and plant operator reports. It's a receive and file, so I don't know if there's anybody wants to, do we have a staff report on that or anything? Or?
We do not have a prepared staff report other than what's presented to you. I'm here to try to answer any questions you have.
Yeah, I'm open to public comment, or you want to say something first?
I don't really, I understand our attorney is here being kind to us to, fill in for the technical consultants, so I don't want to imply that comments that I have reflect in any way on our legal counsel. But we note that Mr. Jackman has been the interim plant superintendent. He's not here. I'm disappointed. And Mr. Jones is, I believe, the current interim superintendent. He's not here. I'm disappointed with that. The headworks issue here, I've questioned this many times. It's a status operational, and then it goes on discussing why it's not operational. Significant efforts. It must have significant nonconformances. There's a whole lot of stuff in here that's just old. I would request that the technical consultants clean this up. On the manholes, raising them to grade, I just parenthetically note that the county notified Mr. Huebner well in advance of that, when the district could have economically addressed the concern. I&I study, the technical consultants are evaluating the cost to benefit. If I was to evaluate the technical consultants' cost to benefit, I would say that that's prohibitively expensive. Financial initiative, annual fiscal year audit, blah, 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 blah. Flurry of materials to Glenn Burdett. There's nothing here that's in italics which would indicate anything's been done. This is a bunch of baloney. Why should we believe any of it? I need to see the audit, and I need to see it now. And the continual stalling and excuse upon excuse upon excuse is unacceptable. We're dealing with large amounts of public funds here. And we damn well better get it straight of where our accounts are, such that they can be audited by an independent auditor and come to some conclusion. This is completely unacceptable. Strong letter to follow. Regional collaboration. The technical consultants continue to meet with stakeholders to coordinate efforts in support of the regional groundwater sustainability project. I would suggest that the technical consultants may be stakeholders, but I don't believe they're the coordinators. I think water systems consulting is probably the coordinators. typical report here, Regional Water Quality Control Board, NPDES permit renewal. Based upon a recent conversation with regional board staff, a draft permit is not likely to be released for public review before late 2017. I'm shocked. Staff's intent, this is about brine disposal, which is a topic that's of concern to numbers of individuals, not the least of which is the Surf Rider Foundation. It says it's staff's intent to process the application as usual. My question is, how as usual? And again, I don't expect the staff who's present tonight to be able to answer that. We're not aware of brine disposed from CCSD, regardless of previously submitted applications. Not aware. I would expect a more emphatic statement than that. Intent to provide CCSD with the same notice used to advise. What is that same notice? And it's our intent to draft the standard operating procedure for brine disposal. Reading between the lines, I note that we have no standard operating procedure for brine disposal. So I would hope that that's being addressed by the technical consultants with some sense of alacrity. Upcoming agenda items, 2015-16 fiscal year audit. Yeah, right. Show me the beef. I look at the plant operations report. Chlorine usage per day, 25 pounds one day, 453 pounds another day. That does not suggest to me a stable process, and that's a serious concern to me. I would expect a stable process to have more uniform numbers. Notice of violation. There's no mention of whether we received a violation from the air quality. So those are my comments.
Thank you for those comments. Do you have any comments before I open for public comment?
I was wondering if any copies of the recruitment brochure are available. Oh, thank you. I'll pick it up at the end. Other than that, I see some in the plant data, you know, kind of a yo-yo effect on the average. One thing is up, the next one is down, up, down, up, down, almost consistently across the line. So I don't know whether we're doing good or not good.
Okay, ready for public comment?
Julie Tacker, and I think the phrase that you're looking for, Mr. Hill, is show me the money, not show me the beef. Because that's the audit. You got a letter, your district did in July from the county auditor, Jim Erb, telling you that if you don't get this audit done, he will send his auditors in at your expense. So that was in July. This has gone on way too long. And, you know, I don't know why the auditor isn't here to explain just even the delay. You could ask for that. Your technical consultants refer to tech memos, and tech memo 7 was before the board in November, and that was for the membrane bioreactor. But the other memos have not come before your board. And if they're not going to come before the board, they still should be distributed to your board. I think your bylaws even suggest that all mail is to be delivered to you once a week. I doubt that's happening, but if it is, then you would have read the mail and these tech memos would have been part of it. I, because I see them referred to here, I actually use the Public Records Act and ask that they be provided to me. The one that I read most recently related to something in the operations and maintenance section of your report here. Staff met with David Seymour from Kennedy Jenks and discussed flood mitigation. So I have the tech memo regarding flood mitigation. I think you would find it interesting. What's staggering to me is just to armor the current buildings from flood is nearly $400,000. These are little concrete walls about 3 foot tall, built all the way around each of the buildings. $400,000. If you add that on top of the rest of the redundancy project, we already know that the project price has climbed to $23 million. By the time you go out to bid and actually have a project before you, it could be 28, 30, maybe more. And what I have asked of this board for years now is that you consider not building the redundancy project at this location. Even though the Coastal Commission approved your coastal development permit, that will expire this December, and you're nowhere near going out to bid. So I will speak to the brine. The intent to process the application as usual. That was actually the processing of the brine application for Cambria as usual. Cambria is not a usual customer. As I recall, the previous application was on the order of some 40,000 gallons a day delivered to your plant. So that's too much. You would displace your other customers. And this, in my mind, as usual, was the administrator approving that application. I think in this one, this is a special permit for a large volume, that it actually should come before your board. And you should fully understand the environmental impacts of such a dump at your plant. That's all for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on the report, technical report?
Ron Arnelson. One of my favorite movies is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And in this movie, they rob a lot of banks. They're the hole-in-wall gang. Rob a lot of trains. And so this guy, E.H. Harriman, who owns Union Pacific, decides to put a contract on him. They get real scared. They go to Bolivia. They change their ways. They become straight. They decide they're going to be payroll guards. And so in the scene of the movie, they're going down the hill, and they're pointing out every place that they could be ambushed. And their boss says, I have idiots on my team. You do not get robbed down the hill. When you don't have money, you get robbed on the way up. Well, idiots on my team pretty much describes the way I feel about this whole sanitation district. Our administration has not been real bright. I don't think our legal service has been that great. And I'm really not very happy with people that sit on the board and it just become rubber stamps.
Anyone else? Okay. Closed public comment. That brings us to miscellaneous items. Do we have any written communications?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Board member communications?
None here.
I have a couple. First of all, I would request that we put on the next meeting agenda for the board to contact Mr. Erb's office and take him up on his offer to provide auditing assistance for us, because it's very clear that we've been blown off here for months and months and months and months, and we have no accounting for the public's money. That's completely unacceptable, and perhaps if Mr. Erb were to come in, we would straighten out the difficulty. I would also move that we agendize on the next meeting discussion of increasing the board to a 5-member board.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara, you didn't have anything. So that brings us now, we'll go to closed session. Can you give a staff report on
Thank you, Madam Chair. The board will receive. Recess into closed session to discuss public employee appointment titled District Administrator. Thank you.
Public comment on the closed session.
Sorry. It's all right. I just know my way around a little bit. Julie Tacker, and I'm hopeful that you have bunch of great applicants before you. I hope that you actually interview as many as possible. I think your one-on-one conversations with many of them will give you a very strong, you know, feeling. You get it from your gut. You know what you're looking for. And you might even Google these people yourselves. Do a little homework of your own. You can't always trust the recruiter. I've had lots of experience with that and found plagiarism, found outright lies in resumes. You really want, and then when you do start negotiating contracts, get probationary periods. Get something that you can let them go when it's found that they're not really who they say they are. Okay?
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on closed session? Seeing none. Okay, we will adjourn to closed session. Are you concerned?